Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And this is the midweek show, Fiber Talk, the thing we do twice a week. And hey, it's both of us this time. She's
Yay.
Back.
Yay. I know. So my apologies, and I appreciate everybody's patience in dealing with my extended illnesses, I guess. But it seems like my voice is working now, so we're going to run with it.
That's right. Yes. Yes, well, good to have you with us. Solo, just, I don't like it, so.
Yeah. Yep. Believe me, I wasn't having a great time on this end either, so.
Confident of that.
So, I will be coughing and clearing my throat throughout, so again, I'll apologize in advance for that, but at least I am here, and we can go forward.
We'll take it. So, big development, because Gary started playing with video software. So if you don't know already, we are now putting these podcasts up on FlossTube on YouTube. So they're not video. Jane Woods suggested she might be able to see the both of us in our pajamas. And I immediately suggested that wasn't happening.
I'm glad that you brought that up because I am actually in my pajamas right now. It occurred to me that I don't think we've even posted, I don't know that we've posted a photo of us ever. Have we?
I don't think so, no.
All right. So I was gonna post a photo and then I figured I probably should ask your permission before I do so. So I think what we'll do is, on the Fiber Talk page, I have one really good photo of us from our old podcasting days. So I might put that up so that people actually have a face or faces to attach to voices, finally.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Yes. Actually, send that photo and I'll put it up with this week, midweek podcast, and then we'll have
awesome.
It right there. All right.
Yeah.
Good call. So, yeah, so you can get us on FlossTube. Just go to YouTube, search FlossTube Fiber Talk, and we'll come up. There's just the one video, the one with Arlene from Sunday, but I'm going to start putting up the old ones, so eventually we'll have all of them up there. All now we're more than 50 podcasts now.
I know, and I'm so excited to be part of that whole group of people. You know,
right.
For me it's pretty much of an honor because those are some pretty outstanding folks contributing some pretty outstanding material. So I'm really really glad that we were able to do that, and I'm looking forward to doing it more.
Yep. So there's no video. I mean, it's audio and I put some pictures up and the first effort looks pretty crappy because the pictures are much bigger than the screen, but I'll get it figured out. But anyway, you can hear us talk. And, so we're there, but we're still, through your favorite podcast app or at wetalkfiber.com, whichever works. But, so we're, another place to get us. And, oh, you said before we started that you have a story. You have a story.
I do.
Well, I'm going to shut up and let you tell stories.
So I am, when we first started, our first guest was Debbie Rowley. And so my first piece that I started in this whole needlepoint endeavor was the Debbie Rowley Diamond Delights 10, which I am very, very close to finishing right now. I'm working on the border. And I'm waiting for one thread to show up that I ran out of. And then I will be done. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I should probably post a picture once it's complete. And I think that I did a Walnetto, which was very exciting. And I think I did it wrong. So I'm going to post a picture of that and then everybody can tell me how it didn't work because I'm not sure. Or they could say, yeah, that's right, or no, that's not right, and this is what you should have done. So that's little bits of the project. But all told, it was really, really fun to do, and I'm so glad that I chose this piece because there were, maybe 20 different fibers, I forget, and 30 different types of stitches. Again, I'm not really counting, I'm just kind of looking at it now. So I learned a ton. I learned a ton about how to work with fibers, work with all these different types of things. You know, I've asked you guys questions along the way. So this is my starter piece, and each one after this will get incrementally better. I don't think it's perfect, and that's okay. It's good enough, and I learned a ton. So, and it's beautiful. I really like it. It's really well designed. The colors are stunning. So, I made it pretty much exactly the way that Debbie had intended, with the exception of the tulle. She has a piece of tulle sort of woven through the piece, and I left that out. But aside from that, it's done. So that's not the story, though. Here's the story.
Okay.
Okay. I had to lay that out, right?
All right.
So here's the story. So I have been sick now for 2 months straight, and it's just been what seemed like a virus, like a horrible summer virus cold thing at the beginning, and then it got a little bit better, and then it just got way worse, and it's just been a slog of 2 months, and there were a couple of periods of time where I was really, really sick, like bad sick. So I have been taking this piece back and forth to friends' houses and things like that. So I had been doing that, and I've been using Nicola's suggestion of keeping it in a pillowcase, right? And so that was great because it keeps dust off and things like that. So one day, about 2 weeks ago, I had the piece with me in my car. I went to work, and then I just got precipitously worse during the day as far as sickness-wise. I was in bad, bad shape. So I left work. I went to the urgent care facility. I was there for hours. It was miserable. By the time I got home from the pharmacy, I was, I could barely breathe. It was like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. I was in bad, bad shape. So I brought the piece home and I put it on my dining room table. Now, I have two cats. They don't have access to bedrooms or my living room because there's doors, but they do have access to the rest of the house. So most of the time I do my stitching in the living room. So that's a place where they are banned. It is a cat-free zone. So everything is safe. Being sick, I wasn't really thinking about a whole lot of things other than getting horizontal in my bed. So I put the piece on the table, figuring, all right, it's in a pillowcase. They can't scratch it. They can't pull at it. The worst they could do is sit on it, which really very little it could do. So I was very careful to put it upside down. So at least they would sit, they wouldn't stretch it, So I was thinking a tiny bit. And I went to bed. So, you know how we've been having conversations about cleaning canvases?
Yes.
Yeah. So I got the opportunity to clean a canvas.
Oh, no.
Gary?
Oh, no.
Ask me why.
Why did you have this opportunity?
Because the cats didn't sit on the piece. Somebody had a hairball and threw up on it.
Oh, no.
Yes, they did. So
of all the places in the entire house.
In the entire house. That was it. Right. Exactly. So, and again, there's, right? We have to look at the positive side of this. This is our opportunity to learn something. So the pillowcase, thank you, Nicola, saved the piece from all of the solid matter. I'm trying to keep this as not graphic as possible. But all of the liquid stomach juices soaked right through the pillowcase into the piece. Okay. So when I woke up the next morning, it had soaked through and there was a spot that was maybe 3 inches in diameter that was affected, we will say. most of it was free canvas, actually. It was going to be, it isn't stitched in the piece. It's just, it just has a grid of, a Krynek braid on it. So this is canvas that's going to be just white and out in the open. So I don't get to cover it with thread. So kind of screwed. And part of the liquid had soaked into some of the thread that I had already stitched. So I got to try very carefully, methods of cleaning both bare canvas and actual threads. So if anybody would like to know how durable threads are and how to clean cat vomit out of your piece, I can now tell you.
But you were successful.
Yes. So I'll take you on the, so I scaled, I went from least offensive to to, you know, the nuclear option and cleaning the peace, because I really, you know, what do you have to lose? Because it's, right. it's either going to be ruined or it's not, right? So the first thing I tried was, plain water, and that did nothing. So then I tried baby wipes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because yeah. baby wipes. So, you know, my job is I work in, personal care and development. So we make lotions and creams and shampoos and things that clean things. So baby wipes is one of the things that we make. So, baby wipes have, surfactant, a cleanser in it, but it's very, very mild. And it doesn't have a lot of fragrance in it usually. So that was a go-to. That was one of my first go-tos. That didn't work. So I can say that for mild, like if you have a mild scuff, like I had another spot on the canvas that had a little bit of a scuff on it, the baby wipes took it right out. So, baby wipes on plain canvas and threads, did nothing to the thread at all. And on the canvas, it was completely fine. So that's an option. And I always keep baby wipes around for my hands anyway. Just before I pick up a piece, I usually just clean up. So anyway, that didn't work. Then I tried dish soap. That was not successful either. And dish soap you'd have to rinse out. So then the nuclear option was the Clorox gel. So they make a Clorox gel pen for taking out stains, and basically it's a bleach in a gel form. And the idea is that for if you have a stain on a t-shirt or something, let's say, you can put the gel right on the stain without it getting on another part of the fabric, and then wash it. So let's say I had a red and white striped shirt. I could bleach the white area without affecting the red area. So it's a great product, by the way. If you have kids or you're a sloppy person like me, it works really well. So, on the white canvas, I knew it was going to work. But I was terrified of what it was going to do to the threads, right?
Right.
So I used it on the canvas, and I will say it took quite a bit of working. So I used the gel. And I used a baby wipe to sort of rub it in, and I used a towel on the other side to sort of support the canvas and absorb anything to make sure it wasn't sort of wicking through the canvas.
Yeah.
So the bleach pen worked. You have to put it on. You have to leave it on for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes and then get it all out. So that was effective on the white canvas. So then the next thing was the threads. So what do you do? Because if you bleach them, then either nothing's going to happen, or they're going to get clean, or they're going to completely bleach out and lose their color. And the way I figured was the worst thing that can happen is they completely lose their color, in which case I tear them out and stitch them again. So yeah. At that point, nothing to lose, right? So I went ahead and bleached them, and they all stood up. Oh. Everything was totally fine. And this was, it was regular, it was DMC threads, so just plain cotton threads. There was some silk, not silk in there, there was pearl cotton. I'm looking at it right now trying to figure out, and some of the flat ribbon also. And everything held up really well. The only thing was the ribbon, just from the friction, got a little less shiny, I would say. So I may take that portion out and stitch it again with fresh thread, just because it doesn't reflect light. So in dull light, you don't notice it at all. In bright light, it doesn't quite reflect as much as the non-affected ones. But other than that, it did a pretty good job of taking it out. And so my test was to show it to another person and say which quadrant was affected, and no one was able to tell. So to me, that's a success.
Yeah.
So that's my story. So really, with this piece, I got to experience everything, right? I got to stitch a whole bunch of new stitches. I got to figure out needlepoint infrastructure, because I'd never used stretcher bars before. All these new things, working from a chart in this way I'd never done before, and I had never had a cat vomit on my work. So I got all that done in my first piece.
Well, I feel really good. That's a success.
I feel really good about this. Like, I accomplished a lot.
Yes,
I knocked
out
a lot of firsts with this piece, Gary. So I can't wait for the second one, because, you know,
yeah,
what's going to happen then?
Well, cat vomit overnight. That's impressive. That's impressive, though. I mean, gastric juices able to set in overnight, mm-hmm. and you're still able to get everything out so you can't see. That's impressive.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I figured by the time you got done monkeying, at best you'd just tear out the stitches and redo it, and at worst you'd ruin the canvas and have to trash the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So if I had to trash the whole thing, I had to trash the whole thing. You know, things happen. I would have been upset. But the fact of it was, I was really, really sick. And, you know, I was really sick. And
at some point, you don't care.
No, I needed to be horizontal. I was very, very ill. So all is well. So I think it's fine. If there is a little tiny bit of stain, probably only I and now everyone listening will ever notice it. So I'm going to go ahead and frame it and finish it up and frame it. And even if there is a stain, it is going to stay there, because now I have this ridiculous story attached to the piece. So, because sometimes it's about that, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Something to tell. Well, I just, you know, I've actually talked about this with a couple of people. About, because a Debbie Rowley piece generally is something people do after they've done several others.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last thing you'd want to start out with. But with your approach to it and fighting your way through, I'm sure at times, and other times just stitching away, you know, yeah, look what you've learned all in one piece that would take most people several pieces and a long time to learn, just because you dove in the deep end.
Yeah, I'm impatient. I think that's a little bit of it, right? So, and I like to learn sort of at my own pace. And if you're stitching a piece that's a simple piece and it's big, like I bought another canvas. It's a charted canvas, and it's just all figures. It's actually all Shakespeare figures from different plays. And I didn't pick that piece up, and in fact, I haven't even started it yet, because there's nothing to be learned from it. It's all one single stitch. So I could have done that, and I would have, you know, just delayed the learning process. So what I'll do as we go through, because I know that there are things that are okay, and I know that there are things that much more knowledgeable people like you will look at and say, yeah, not exactly right. So I'll post pictures and say, all right, everybody, rip this apart. You know, what could have been done better? And that's the greatest thing, because there's so many things here that can be critiqued. So there's a lot of opportunity to learn from that too, not just from the doing of it, but then now to have this collective hive mind of stitchers who can look at individual parts and say, you know, yeah, this is okay, or yeah, you totally missed it on that part, and you know, this is what you should do. So I mean, I have this huge resource, and so I figured, why not take advantage of that and be a little courageous and just go for it. So
and
for people that are intimidated by the 60 page book that is the Debbie Rowley chart, I would say, now having finished it, don't be, because as a complete beginner who has never stitched any of these stitches before, the instructions are so explicit, I could follow them very, very easily. There was very few times where I had to sit and say, I don't know, or start something and say, no, I didn't understand that well, and I had to start over. That happened very, very few times. Everything is described beautifully. It's charted well, so you can see exactly how to do the stitches. So even though it seems like it's really difficult, and there are some pretty challenging stitches in here, it's taught beautifully. So you can do it. You just have to kind of jump in and again, my standard is not to have a perfect piece. My standard was to learn a whole bunch of things. So there you go.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, well, in talking with Debbie, I mean, she takes great pride in her instructions. I mean, she works hard to make
them
very clear.
She absolutely should. Yeah, and she does a phenomenal job. There's no, you know, I compare it to a cross-stitch, another different cross-stitch, just a charted cross-stitch piece that's more like what I remember from being a kid, and it's just a grid with symbols in it. And this is the color you put here, and this is the color you put there. So, you know, comparing that single slice of paper to this book, it's not even the same game. Not at all.
Yep. Yeah, so. and her charts can be books, but that's just it. They're books, but that's a positive. It's not an intimidating thing. It's a very positive thing.
It absolutely is a positive thing, you know. And I love, you know, there's one portion where she's talking about doing one of the stitches and she says, all right, this sounds crazy and it sounds like it doesn't make any sense, but just go with it and find the rhythm and you'll be fine. And she was absolutely right. If you think about it too much, you kind of screw it up. But then when you just kind of look at it and say, oh, it just kind of travels, so it's just a rhythm, then suddenly it all kind of makes sense. So even that's a great instruction right there. Yep. It's not telling you put your needle here. It's telling you feel the piece, feel the rhythm of the piece, and you'll be guided. That's a beautiful piece of advice. Yep. So I had a great time.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm excited for you because when you tackled that thing, I had reservations for you. I wondered just how it would go, and you've cooked right along with this thing.
Well, what's the worst thing that could happen? It could come out terrible.
Right. That's true.
I don't think I've ever told you the story of Gernard the Ugly Snail. Someday, I will save that story for another day.
Okay.
But that's a story of try the hardest thing that ended the exact opposite way, but in the most delightful way.
Okay, we'll hold that one. All right.
Yes.
All right. So last Wednesday, or Tuesday, or whenever we recorded, and you were barely functioning.
Yeah.
Thursday... Yeah, I was out, and Marga and I were out in Phoenix, and I'd been to the Addicts Summer School on Sunday, their last day. Well, Thursday, late afternoon, as if it matters what time of day it was that this happened, I got to go to the attic, to the shop. And Thursday is stitch day. So women were there, some all day long, just stitching in the store. And when we got there after dinner, there was a good number of ladies there stitching at the tables. And apparently this is a regular thing at the attic. People just show up all day long and stitch until, I think they were open till 8, and just kind of spend the day just stitching and talking to each other. And it looked like a great time. You know, they were.
That does sound fun. Know,
everybody was just kind of camped out and comfortable and had their space and their light and it was really neat. So got to meet some of the ladies there. That was fun. And, some had listened, some didn't know of us. So got to inform. This light, when we had Jean Lee on, the light she talks about is, I knew I'd forget the name. I was going to write it down. Anyway, she talks about a light that they have there at the shop that is a table lamp and magnifier with a ring of LEDs on it. And really, it's a really slick light. I have a floor light, so I don't really need a table light, but I have to say I was tempted to buy one just because it's really cool. But several of the ladies had them. One of the nice features it has is it has a hinged lid that when you're done, lays down over the top of the magnifier so that your magnifier is covered so you don't burn your canvas or burn the table or something like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a real nice feature. And cause I have a cloth bag that I put over mine. But yeah, real nice. But just I looked through one lady. I looked through the magnifier with her magnifier with the light. Really nice. Just a really compact, nice design. And now I'm really kicking myself for not writing down the name of that thing. But anyway, if you're looking for a light, I would suggest contact the Attic and Jean Lee, and she'll fix you up there. I have no idea what it costs, but really, really a nice one. And several ladies had them. So must be a good one. Now, of course, they had them. Maybe that's what Jean provides when they're there at the store. I don't know. But I'll tell you, I'd own one in a heartbeat. So that was really nice. But the fun thing was that I got to do, Jean took me on a tour, because, of course, samplers everywhere in that store. It's quite a large store. And so she took me on a tour of the samplers from the various designers and reproduction people that she has in the store. And, of course, she has the charts for these. And some of them are originals, and some are most are reproductions. And so we got to go through, and she just talked about each one, what her favorites were, and we looked at some of the features and so on and so forth. And so I had my cell phone, so I made a video. I had my cell phone and external mic. So she pinned that on her shirt, and I ran the camera, and we went through all the displays and just looked at the various ones and got up close, was able to get up close and look at some of the detail. And it was just a great time. So I made a video and waited till now. And so now I'll make it available on our FlossTube channel and a link with this podcast to it so that you can go and just go on the tour with us.
And, oh, that's cool. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun to the point where next time we're in Phoenix, we're doing another one. we're absolutely doing another one. I've got some ideas for how to do it. But it was just fun to see these different styles and the different from different reproduction people and different styles of samplers. And we really got in on the detail, and that was really fun to look at. So, yeah, it was a great time. And, of course, Jean Liz and Bree's samplers, so she knows all the details. So, yeah, we had a great conversation doing it. And that was a lot of fun. At the end was the Hands Across the Sea samplers.
Yes.
And we started with the new one. I'll talk about that in a minute. But at the end, she's got, I don't know, she must have half dozen Hands Across the Sea samplers hanging on the wall, all of the reproduction models that are hanging on the wall.
Yeah, that must have been quite,
Yeah.
They are special, aren't they?
Yeah, well, in comparison to most of the others, they're quite large. They're all quite large. So they're impressive visually just because of the sheer size. Nicola obviously likes to buy large samplers. And then, of course, they're stitched perfectly. And every one of them, and we got right in close on a lot of them, and oh, the stitching is just exquisite, just beautiful. And now I had not been all that thrilled with the old Scott from the pictures. And, you know, and this is the old thing about, you know, the pictures never do these things justice.
Right.
And you look at that old Scott thing, and it's a nice looking sampler, but I had not been that thrilled with it. And to the point where, you know, I'm not sure I'd buy that one. Holy smokes. That thing is stunning. It's stunning.
So what's the difference? What changed for you?
The colors show up. I mean, the real colors are stunning. The yellows in there, there's a band through there, kind of a woven band of yellows and like little squares. I'm not sure what they are. But it's always been my favorite part. And you see that thing up close and it's for real. It's just beautiful. But the colors are just gorgeous all the way through, and boy, what a sampler! And so that one, that was one of those where, you know, I think I'd do this one, and it was just not one of mine, one that I would do. And then I got to see the Sarah Borton sampler, which is the one that I own. I own that chart, and that's next up for me. And now I'm really excited to get stitching it, because now that I've seen the sampler, the actual stitch sampler. Oh, I got to get going. And it's a big, beautiful, beautiful sampler. And so it was just, I mean, they're just impressive with their size, but also the detail and the colors And, you know, Nicola just has a real eye for the samplers that she buys and.
Right. For choosing which ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a good end. And in the video, you get to see several of them and, you know, all the little details and, so on and so forth. And it's, yeah, they're very nice. And, you know, not to sell the other samplers short because, boy, Gene has, there's a lot of samplers from a lot of people of all different kinds, and it's a real historic tour with all the samplers that she has, which is what I want to go back and do another one and sit down and say, all right, let's take these samplers from this reproduction person and let's just look at them. Because you could take each one because they each clearly have their favorites and favorite kinds that they like. One, and of course I don't remember the names, but one likes to have samplers that have cows in them. Which you think, oh, that's, but then you think, how many could you find? You know,
probably quite a few.
Yeah, it turns out, apparently a pretty good selection. And, so it was just really educational and a lot of fun to see these and all the colors and different styles and designs. And, you can see why there's that whole world of reproduction sampler people out there who just eat them up because there's so much more to them than just thread on a canvas. You know, there's a story behind every single one of them.
I think that's one of the more lovely parts of that too. And I could see wanting to, because you're right, that, you know, in your head, you have a picture of what a sampler, sort of like the quintessential sampler is with the alphabet and a building and a border and everything. But I would love to do someday, just a strip sampler, and I forget what they're called. Maybe
band,
a strip
band
sampler.
Band,
yes, that, yes. That's the one. And I've seen them done just in red. And they're beautiful and, because they're kind of odd looking, right? But just to stitch that, thinking about what it would have been like to stitch that by, you know, no light, you know, or very little light, because we're sitting here with our fancy LED lights and all these things. Now, granted, we're, you know, several decades older than the people who stitched them originally, but still, you know, we have a lot of, tools at our disposal that they did not have, so it makes it a lot easier. So it's kind of fun as you're stitching to think about the person that stitched it, think about their environment, you know, what was their house like, you know, what did it feel like in the house? To me, that's kind of where my head goes while you're making all those little X's.
Right. Yeah, that's and several of the, you know, that's the thing is, yeah, all those little X's. And a lot of people think, well, all they are is cross stitch. A lot of them have satin stitch and some freeform and, you know, there's a lot more to a lot of these samplers than just making a bunch of X's. And, those little girls were really creative. And there are a couple of band samplers in the video. One that, you speak about that. One I think you'd really like. And then one of the ones from Nicola is the one with the big beehive. So
yes.
I got up close for you. I got up closer for that so you could see that. But, it was just really great. And then got to see now Nicola just this past Monday introduced their latest sampler, Jennifer Gilbert. And that's a Cornwall sampler. And that's where Nicola lives. So, of course, she's excited about that. But, boy.
Did you watch on YouTube her release video?
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause she said, she and I were having a conversation, online conversation, a week or more ago. And, she let me take a look at that video. And I thought, well, that's a really nice sampler. A lot of pink in it. I'm not so sure I care. And then when I saw the live model, you talk about them like they're animals, but you know, the actual model. Wow. Because there's only, I think there's only 9 colors in the whole thing.
So I think something like that, 7 or 9.
Right. And one of the colors is a blue-gray color.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, once I saw that, and I don't know the color, and I don't know what silk it is, didn't ask, don't really care, But once I saw that, I think I would do the sampler just to stitch that color. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Really
and beautiful. She describes it really well in the video, too,
yes.
And the little bit of close-up you can see. And it is unusual because, you know, you imagine samplers almost being, you know, sort of faded primary colors to a point, you know, dark blues and dark reds and greens and olives and things like that. And this is not that at all. It is a very unusual colorway. But it's absolutely beautiful.
Yes,
and just the way it's laid out, I think too, was really special.
Yep. Yeah. So that's one. And you know, it sounds like we're doing a big long commercial for Nicola, but, just her collection of samplers, I get excited about them because they're just really neat. So,
Mm-hmm. Well, we also did a big long commercial for Cat Vomit, so it's okay.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
The cat. No, I'm not even going to try and name it.
Right. So put your, what did we learn though? So I think that's what we need to address here is what did we learn? Perhaps putting your piece in a watertight bag instead
Perhaps.
Of a pillowcase. If you're going to put it in some place like the middle of your dining room table would be a good idea.
And I think the other thing we need to point out is that no cats were injured.
No.
I think we need to point that out.
No cats were injured in the making of this sampler,
right.
or of this piece. That is true. That is true. No, yep. And because truly it was my fault, you know. I think it's so you know how cats do that thing where they bring home mice and things and they bring them as an offering to you and they leave them on the doorstep.
Right.
That's what this was because they knew how important this piece was to me. So they contributed.
Yeah, they did. Mm. Yeah, they did. Yep. So, okay. So, I'll make a link, and I'll share the link, the little tour that we did. Had some fun with it, but also just really, a lot of great viewing there. That was a lot of fun. It's like, I don't know, 16 or 18 minutes, maybe. I don't know. Took us a little bit of time. So a lot of fun doing that. And then, you know, I think we talked about this last week. If we didn't, sorry. But Susan Greening Davis, the discussion that's been going on about needle size and when mm-hmm. she talked about, you know, using bigger needles than you think.
Yes.
To open the thing up and protect your thread and so it doesn't get scruffed through the canvas all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this thread has continued on and some people objecting to it that they prefer to use 26 and 28 threads. And one of the themes that came out of it was people are hesitant to use bigger needles because they feel like it's going to open up the canvas or open up the linen. And then the linen won't go back down. You know,
that was my fear at the beginning too.
And assured that that's not the case mm-hmm. and that you really are better off with the bigger needles. But the tip, so that's been a great discussion, but the tip I took out of it, because one of, if I dislike anything about stitching, it's starting and ending threads. I just find
I'm glad you said that because I think that's what my next thing to learn is like all the great ways to do things like the pin stitch and, you know, Vanna's little way of starting a cross stitch that's invisible. Like that's where I think I can really up my game is doing it neatly because I will not send a picture of the back of this piece because it is a hot mess.
Well, I've learned all the tricks through the years and the pin stitch is the latest trick I've learned. And that pin stitch, thank you, Vanna. Thank you, Nicola, because that's just mm-hmm. really, I did not know about that. You know, away knots and, you know, all the techniques, but still to me, it's just this tedious part when I'd rather just stitch, you know?
Right.
And then it's always, I just have always had this freaked out approach to ending threads. And then I want to make sure that I don't come along halfway through the project and discovered I didn't anchor two or three threads way back at the beginning.
Yes.
They worked their way loose and now I've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just, I, I'm I probably overdo it, but in terms of anchoring threads.
I do too, I'm sure. Yeah.
And one of the things that I find annoying and always have is weaving a thread under stitches on the back side, because it just seems like it's just an awful lot of work to make sure that you get it under the threads, you don't split threads, get a canvas thread involved, and I just always feel like it's just a lot of extra work. And one of the tips that came out of this discussion about needle size, which I've yet to try, but I'm definitely going to, is when you're going to end a thread, change needles, change to a smaller needle.
Okay, well, that makes sense, because then you can slip under the thread. So,
right.
But to me, then that's even more work, because then taking needle off, threading another needle, that to me is, that's more work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know, and that's initially what I thought. But, I mean, I always, on my needle minder, I always have two or three sizes of needles anyway.
Yeah.
So a smaller one is always handy. And I got it. That's why I haven't tried it, but I got to try it to see, because if it actually makes it easier to weave under and finish off a thread, then the extra moment taken to rethread that end might not be so bad. It was just an interesting suggestion, and you could immediately see how it would be easier to end the thread. But then, yes, I agree with you. Okay, do I really want to stop, pull the needle off, put another one on, and then go on?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, the other thing that strikes me as we're talking about it is it's not only about the dimension, the width of the needle, the length of the needle matters too, especially if you get towards the end of a thread and you're really, you know, I will often, you know, I tend to be, I think it's just old habits, very frugal about thread. So I'll get to the very, very end of the thread and I'm stretching to get the needle to go, you know, to weave under. So if you switch to a shorter needle, that would probably be helpful as well, because right. then you don't have to, you know, you can take more of those woven stitches on the back without having to stretch that little last inch of thread that you're desperately trying to weave under.
Right.
That's actually, I hadn't thought to do that until you mentioned changing needles, but that would completely solve that problem.
Another trick you can use on that, because I used to take threads all the way to the end, but anymore I don't. I find a logical stopping point, because I just, that last length where it's been dragged through so many holes.
I'm learning.
So I'll just pitch it, because I used to be really stingy, and now I just pitch it. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But a trick, you get caught, and also I've had instances where I didn't anchor a thread, or I snagged it on the back and pulled it out and needed to put it back, and so you got this short little stub. A trick is to put an unthreaded needle under the stitches, and then put your needle threader through the needle eye.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and then what you do is you put the stub of thread underneath the needle minder and pull it through with a tweezer, and then you can pull the needle the threader, mm-hmm. not the needle minder, but you can pull the threader back through the needle eye, and then you have a needle that's threaded and are also woven under the threads. You know, the stitch threads, so you can just pull it through then and be done with it. That's a way to save yourself.
That means I have to get a needle threader though, Gary, because I still haven't done that.
Oh, see, that's all
surprising,
I ever use.
Right?
Yeah.
Why? Because I'll tell you exactly why I don't have one. Because the needle threader was the tool of my great grandmother. So she always needed to use a needle threader. My grandmother did as well. And I, as a young girl, never did, because I could see, you know, mm-hmm. like an eagle. So now I'm just, you know, doing that bucking age thing, and I'm not going to get a needle threader, much to my own disadvantage, because I would be able to thread needles a lot faster if I would stop being so stubborn and admit that I can't see anything.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't even pretend. I just get needle threaders. Forget it. I don't need the extra hassle.
I can be pretty pigheaded about things, I guess.
That's not what I care.
I'm learning about myself. That's what it is.
No, I don't need that extra hassle. No, just give me a threader, pull it through, and let's get to stitching
And then be done. Yep. That's so much smarter.
But that is a trick. Yep. So there you go. Okay, we got to get you. All right, we got to get you good needles and a threader.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we need.
Well, okay, so, and I have sort of started my, you know, in my infrastructure building, in advance of our, stump work project, which you and I are going to do, have started collecting needles because you need lots of different types of needles for that. So I now have, milliner's needles and just regular embroidery needles and all kinds of needles in my little collection, my stash of stuff.
All right.
So.
Yeah, those milliner needles, those are really valuable for French knots and bullion. Mm. Did you use it for your bullions?
I did not.
Oh, yes. Yep, give that a try. See if you don't like bullions a little bit better. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And definitely
that's
for true. French knots, yep. Mm-hmm. Because that eye is not any fatter than the needle, so it just slides right through. Yep.
That's smart. Yep.
Yep, give that a try. Mary Corbett with one T, yeah.
Very true.
It always gets back, 6 degrees of separation from Mary Corbett, you know?
To Mary Corbett. it is true. And, you know, so often I'll Google something to, you know, to learn, you know, I need to know how to do such and such. And maybe it's just because she's ubiquitous. More often than not, her site is the one that comes up. And then I end up in the internet rabbit hole of reading a beautiful story about something that happened, you know, because before she gets to the tip, there's always the whole long story, you know, kind of like my history of, you know, my piece here. So, yeah, so you always have to read the lengthy story of how she got to where it was that she was doing before you end up with the tip. Right. So.
And you want to read that story because it's always fun.
Well, because she writes so beautifully and it's just such a homey kind of natural. It's like you're having a conversation with somebody, you know, that you like and somebody you're having a conversation with somebody that you enjoy talking to. So, I don't mind spending that extra time and getting stuck there. That's why I get stuck there.
Yeah. Her site for me is like going to a dictionary to look up a word. And a half hour later, yeah, 40 words later, you've learned words. Yeah, it's.
Exactly correct.
Yeah. All right, that's it. The midweek show coming up Sunday. Oh, this is going to be fun. Gail Cerna.
Yes.
We get to learn about the book.
I am so excited.
Yes, get to learn about the book. We get to learn about embroidery. Yeah, she's quite a lady. So that's Sunday, Gail Cerna. And so check out our video on the tour of the attic samplers. And if you're a FlossTube person, subscribe to us on FlossTube and add us to your collection of things that you have on while you stitch. And that's it. We'll be back Sunday with Gail Cerna. Thanks for listening.
Take care.